Wow, we didn't get that.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Somewhere in Vegas here on blogtalkradio.com. I'm Mark with the GMO. It was weird that the the British lady did not come up right away. She usually does, but that's okay. I'm very privileged to have a really outstanding filmmaker. She has a new film called The Warning out right now on video on demand right now and DVD. She's like I said, really, really busy working some really good press on this film, which is a really exciting horror film. I got to see the trailer before I came on the air, and it's one of those things. It's really kind of a chiller kind of thing. So I'm very happy to have Summer Moore on with us right now. How are you doing, Summer?
Good. How are you?
Good. I was just asking you before we went on air that, you know, you guys just had a screening the first time in front of an audience a couple weeks ago. What was it like for you to finally get it in front of an audience and see their reactions?
Oh, I was nervous the entire movie. I mean, it was interesting to listen to where people laugh or they don't laugh or they get scared or don't scared, because it's not necessarily everything you think is going to be, everybody should laugh here, and then they don't, and you're like, wait, I thought that was funny. So that part was really interesting, but it was also really good because we got feedback from the people at the end. We had a question and answer session and got validations that this stuff really did transpire in Colorado, and people really liked the film, and so that was awesome.
Yeah, now, you're shooting us like, you shot the film like a documentary, and it's something that's been going on for the past, I would say the past decade since Blair Witch came out. But, you know, what was it like shooting in that genre and just seeing, I mean, out on the woods, it's just, I think, three of you, plus I would assume the director is there and the camera person is there with you as well.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like for you to kind of film that way and to kind of the film kind of a guerrilla style kind of like that?
Well, I mean, we did have a full crew, so it was different than Blair Witch Project, which was more like just the three actors had their own cameras, because I wanted to make it. I didn't want people throwing up in the audience while watching it and trying to make it a better quality of a found footage than a lot of the other ones. There's different sides of it. I mean, if you're talking from the acting side of it, then that's really hard because you have to just do one continuous take, and if you mess up, you have to start up at the beginning versus traditional films, you can cut around and mess up or whatnot, so that makes it a lot harder. From the production side of things, it's weird. Found footage itself is just, it's a difficult genre to do, and both the director and I have pledged we will never do another found footage film again. It's just, we were able to do it in a shorter shooting schedule because it was found footage and because it was the documentary style, but it's a chore to edit, and again, like, if there are people messing up, you lose the entire take, and you just have to start over, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously a hard task, to be able to redo a take and do it as well. I mean, and then plus, as a director, you have to give multiple notes in that situation, you know, like, you know,
right.
Oh, this certain part, you have to do this, or this certain part, you have to do that as well, so. You know, I mean, is this your first crack at doing a horror film?
Yes, but not acting in one, but like producing or writing one. Yes.
What was probably the biggest lesson you learned during the filming?
Oh, geez, from the production, from being a producer side, or which you have to tell me which hat you want to know about.
either one, Summer.
I'm never going to produce another feature by myself again. So that's the main thing I learned is I only did it because I couldn't find a partner to be able to help me out. And so I felt like the only way to get it done is I'm going to have to do it myself. And it would turn out to be just a tremendous amount of work. I definitely don't want to shoot on such a micro budget again, because I ended up wearing a lot more hats than I probably should have throughout the beginning all the way through post-production, and doing things that just we didn't have the money or the talent to be able to do it. So it was like, I've got to jump in and learn how to do various aspects of it. So, I mean, the budget coupled with the found footage style and producing it myself is probably all major lessons for me.
Well, tell me, how do you got started in filmmaking?
I've been an actress for a long time, and my acting career really wasn't going where I wanted to be. I wasn't going out for the roles that I wanted to and getting my face out there. And I figured I'm gonna try to do something that would set me apart from everybody else in LA. So I drew up on my background of growing up in Colorado and used this these actual accounts of stories that took place, and then worked that into a screenplay. So I guess that's really it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we see a lot of actors, put on the producing hat and the directing hat, et cetera. You just did the producing on this one, but is directing something that you might be thinking about in the future?
No. I mean, no, on this one I wrote, I acted, and I produced in it. So those are the three titles, my main titles on this film. But no, I don't ever want to direct. I mean, I only produced because it's something I'm good at. It's a business, you have to wear a business hat for that. I really like the creative side of it. When I get to act and I get to write, it's just like my soul craves it. I love acting and writing, and then producing is just a means to get the projects that I want done and the roles that I want to do. So directing, it does not even sound fun to me at all.
Well, how was it for you to you said that the production side is obviously a little bit of a chore as well, but did you have it seemed like you might have had you guys probably had a lot of fun kind of making this, even though it was more of a more of work than you expected to, but it was that the case that you guys did actually have fun in the end of this?
Oh geez. I mean, I loved going back to my hometown and being able to work with local people there. I tried to get as many local people on our set to try to help them with their film making careers. So that part was fun. It was nice to be out in nature in these awesome sets that you can't even, make in a sound stage here or anything like that. So that part was fun. It was fun, some of the scenes, to be able to see them come to life because I see it in my head, and then to actually see it happening. There's just some awesome scenes in there. They're like, "Oh my gosh, this is so cool!" And people getting goosebumps because they read it in the script and then they actually get to do it. So, I mean, yes, I can't say that it wasn't all. It was all torture because there's definitely some of the people that I loved working with. I love my director. I would work with him a million times over. He's a great guy. So, yes, I can't. I had fun, but it was. There's been a lot of pain just
Yeah.
for some fun,
Yeah, you have to, you kind of have to have you have to suffer for your art, as it were. And I mean, it must. You said you went back to your hometown as well. Obviously, scouting locations wasn't too terrible when you got back there as well. I mean, did you have some thoughts in your head after your, while you were writing the screenplay, where some of these scenes were going to take place?
I mean, I'd heard from the stories of places that these had transpired, but people weren't able to tell me exact points. Usually people would be on a hike and they'd say, "We came across a cave," but they don't know where the cave was. So I had to do a lot of research online of these places that I had never been to growing up. And so, I mean, I was able to draw some on my history of growing up there, but again, I didn't do a whole lot of hiking out there, and I didn't go out to caves and things like that. And then, right before we were about to shoot, the Colorado had a major flood, like the biggest of all time, and it washed out several of our major locations. So when I got to Colorado, I had to start doing whole new location scouts because we were really in trouble on some of the major scenes. So. It was a lot of work, and then it was just right before shooting time. I mean, I got 2 days of location scouting, and then director flew in the next day, and all the crew, and then we pretty much started shooting, I think, a day after that. So there was not much time to do anything but looking for new sites.
How was it for you, with the actors and to be able to act with the people that you did? Was it was were they were you familiar with these actors, or were these actors actually cast?
They were I mean, I didn't hold a whole casting process for the major actors. For the supporting roles, yes, they had to audition for it. They were from Colorado. It was very hard to find those people because Colorado doesn't necessarily have a setup organization that Los Angeles does, where you can just go on one website and locate all these different actors. So I had to get very resourceful on how can I locate Colorado actors by going to different agencies and seeing all the listings of their people, and then trying to contact the people individually. As far as the main actors, the male role, he auditioned for a short film that I did, and I really liked him for this role, but then I ended up cutting it. So I pitched this project to him after the fact and was just like, are you interested at all in doing this? And of course, he jumped on board and was really excited about it. So he didn't audition for this one per se, but he did for another, it was actually for a comedy. So that's how I found him.
Yeah, you know, you also mentioned you've done shorts. You've done shorts before this feature, and then I think you're going to be doing a couple a short or two after it. For you, what does it mean to be able to do a short film? And would you do that instead of doing another feature? Can you just tell us that kind of reasoning?
Well, this next one that's coming out is called The Karma of Happiness, and it's based on an international best-selling book about helping people be happy and get the things they want in life by helping others. And it is kind of a teaching tool that I'm hoping the author will take around the world with him. And he gives lectures around the world and gets like people in the thousands around the world. And so I would like to help him have that as a tool, so they have a visual media to be able to learn this process instead of just doing all lecture. On top of that, I have been told that some other people are interested in maybe trying to fund a feature of it. So that wasn't my intention going into that particular one, but I realize that's a weird case for a short film. The first short film that I did, which was a comedy, I mean, a lot of times we do short films is because we want to be able to either raise money for a feature or just to get our voice, to get our name out there so that maybe we can start doing other projects. And all my projects that I do are for my acting career, just because I love to act and I want to be able to write these roles for myself or act these roles. And LA is just a hard place that to even get your foot in the door in front of a casting director is just hard enough. So it doesn't necessarily mean you're a bad actor, or you could be just a phenomenal actor and you just can't even get the exposure you want. So that's why a lot of people do their own short films. But on top of that, budget constraints, our next feature, though, it is called And the Dead Shall Walk, and that's a horror film. So I'm not looking to only do shorts anymore. This short that I just did is only because I wanted to help it with the author touring and things like that. So I don't know that I'll keep doing shorts.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I asked that, you know, and you kind of hinted on it, is the fact that, you know, obviously actors like it as a platform as well, and so does filmmakers. It seems to me, I was at Sundance this year, and I was able to kind of see the process of where some of these filmmakers are doing these short films in order to get a little bit of exposure in terms of their acting career, and like I said, the filmmakers of them as well. And that gets you in front of these, these producers, these directors, these people in Hollywood that get to see you on that, and kind of bypass the whole idea of trying to knock down somebody's door to be able to get exposure in this as well. Have you been to Sundance at all or any of these film festivals? And has that been kind of a little bit of an inspiration for you to try to reach out a lot more and do your filmmaking the way you do?
No, I have not been to Sundance. I've just entered my short film, the Karma of Happiness, into a couple short film contests, and I think there's one other one that I want to enter. It is inspiration, but film festivals themselves are hard to get into. So you could have a good product. And I've been to the South by Southwest conference where they talked about how they select films getting in and whatnot. And it kind of just, they're unique in the way they pick. But most of them, it's just like, you could have a great film, and for some reason, they just decide at that point, it's just, oh, it's not going to really fit with our programming schedule, and then they just don't take you. So that even in itself is getting into a film festival is tough. It's like the whole industry is like out to like try to make it impossible for you to succeed. So it'd be cool to be in a film festival, but that's also just a lot more work to try to, you're paying all these entrance fees and you're hoping you get in. And a lot of them, if you hear a lot of these success stories, they got rejected how many times, and they may have not even gotten into a film festival. And then it turns out to be this Academy Award winner or something like that. So I think film festivals are awesome, but they've also turned more political, and it's who's in your film. And if you don't have a celebrity in your film, a lot of them, they're not as interested. So kind of a bummer that it's turned into that. South by Southwest is very unique that they don't require that. They actually like it when there's not names in it, but that's unusual.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, you know, I mean, the Slam Dance Film Festival was going on around the same time, and I was actually more towards the Slam Dance Film Festival there. I mean, it was basically, you know, kind of an offshoot, and Slam Dance has been basically what Sundance was like 10, 15, 20 years ago. And, you know, I mean, yeah, you know, and Sundance, I think it is a little bit more political, because I saw a lot of celebrities that are that were premiering their films out there as well. And then Slam Dance, and they did a really great job of actually, you know, doing some really great great stuff. There was a couple people that had a couple familiar faces, but for the most part, a lot of their films were, you know, a lot of unknowns as well. So I'm hoping that, you know, I mean, Sundance has just become so Hollywood that it's just absolutely ridiculous. So, yeah, I can understand that as well. Yeah, I was going to talk about, you know, I don't know if you saw the Mark Duplass lecture at all, did you?
No.
Okay. Yeah, there's video online, and Mark had actually talked about how video on demand is going to be helping, and he had highlighted a bunch of this stuff about, you know, about new filmmakers and all that as well. You know, you don't have to have a huge budget in order to make an impact right now. There's so much demand for it right now. What's your take right now on the scene in terms of entertainment in general and the availability of being able to put out your product to places like an on-demand service?
Well, I mean, it's still not the easiest process. Getting distribution is not so easy, especially for our type of film. Like, if we hadn't done a found footage style film, we probably would have had a lot easier time. So that's another thing of why it's like, oh, I'll never do another one of these again. It's just they have there's a lot of those handheld ones out there, and a lot of them make people nauseous, and so therefore the sales agents immediately are like, nope, sorry, nope, they just want traditional films. So once we had to really, I went to Hong Kong, I went to a film market there to try to drum up some business and to try to get a sales agent, and that was a big response that I had. If I just had a traditional horror film, I bet I would have sold it right away. So once I finally found a sales agent, he's got his hands in the pot on a lot of VOD and DVDs and whatnot. I mean, for the most part, as an independent film, you're not going to get theatrical distribution, which is what most filmmakers go into, like, I want to see it on the big screen, and you're not going to get it, unfortunately. It's a pipe dream, as well as you're not going to make millions and millions of dollars on your film. So it's kind of just trying to get your feet wet and then hopefully make a profit so that you can turn it over and start doing your next one. But there are a ton of VOD platforms around the world. It's unbelievable how many places there are. The question is, though, even though you get on their VOD platform, are they really going to highlight you and market you enough that you get a lot of exposure? And some people get a lot of money out of VOD even without names in their film, but I mean, there's so many films on there. It's just a matter of if yours is not put up at the top and featured and whatnot, then unless you've got a name in there, people aren't going to be searching for you. So it's kind of like self-publishing. You can get it, but how are you going to make money doing it? You know, it still requires the filmmaker to do a lot of social media and to try to get their title out there so people want to watch it.
And you know, obviously you got to consider your audience as well. I mean, you know, for in a horror film, I mean, I think there's a, you know, really vast, good audience for the horror genre, as it were. But, you know, is that something that you consider when you're taking on a project? Is the fact of what audience you want to capture?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the reason that I did a horror film was purely because there is a dedicated the audience to horror, and you don't necessarily have to have names in the film, which I purposely did not want any names in the film, which kind of came around and stabbed us in the back afterwards. But in horror, people will watch it even though there's not, you know, Brad Pitt in it or something like that. And that's one of the only genres that's like that, as well as it has a cult following. So if you can get it out there and get people to actually like it, then it can spread like wildfire, versus if you do a drama, it's a lot harder to get people to watch it unless you've got Brad Pitt in it or something like that. So
what was the first horror film that you ever watched?
Oh, brother. Oh my gosh. I have no, I mean, I can remember watching Poltergeist as a kid. So, but I don't know if that was my first one. I like Twilight Zone. I mean, that's TV series, but I mean, I guess probably around Poltergeist around there, maybe Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, I mean, were you, and it's been weird since that time how horror movies have changed. The big market horror movies have kind of morphed out of the sci-fi movie monster kind of in the movie monster or person in the closet type thing versus the unknown entity that's in the house or the unknown entity that's there that you cannot see, it's
Right.
kind of the Jaws coming back in the form of a extra spiritual being, as it were. How is it for you to see kind of the evolution of the horror film since you've seen, back when you were a kid to now?
Well, there's definitely a difference between female and male writing horror. I mean, there's not as much female for sure that write horror films, but I feel like in general, and my director agreed with this as well, that we don't necessarily want to see just blood and gore, and we don't necessarily need to see nudity all over the place. That the scarier things are the things that you don't see, that you hear a noise and you're like, "What was that?" And that your imagination can create so much a better picture of it than you even if you CGI or do this great character or whatever, it's still like it's not the same as your mind going like, "Oh my gosh, please don't go behind that door or what is that?" So I feel like over time we did used to have that kind of stuff, and then we got into more gore, more torture porn with Saw and those kind of movies, and I do not care one bit for any of those. So I myself wanted to go back to more of the things that you don't see. Although Freddy and Jason were not the things you don't see, but they just kind of, I feel like, sucked you in more than watching Saw or the torture porn kind of movies. I feel like those are just like real life situations, and watching people be put in these horrible situations, like, why is that any fun to watch people sawing their arm off so that they can get out of a situation? Like, so I'm trying to bring it back more to the things that I thought were scarier growing up than now. I just feel like our horror films have degenerated over the years, and they're not nearly as scary as they used to be.
Yeah, I mean, and horror was actually the first kind of genre that really embraced the idea of a heroine. I mean, if you think of any of the female, any of the horror films back in the day, most of them had female leads that were the ones that were the protagonist in the film. I mean, it's interesting to see that. You'd never kind of never think about that. They were. This is the first genre that ends up happening, where they're, the lead was a woman,
That is true.
and now we're kind of right now in the new millennium, and that there is a push for more women to have those lead roles in other genres as well. So it's an interesting thought, to say the least.
It is.
And you mentioned that we don't see as many female horror writers as we do male. And filmmakers in general, I think that right now, I think there is a kind of a revolution going on, and I saw this at Sundance this year, of more female filmmakers, kind of making the point of wanting to produce films and to direct films as well.
That's awesome.
I mean, you got to be in. It's kind of an interesting time, especially for you. Don't you think that of being a female producer right now, doing films like this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's awesome that there is the voice that women are starting to be able to come out, that we are in such a male-driven field. It's just crazy to think. I mean, how rare I am in a room full of, I mean, how often I'm in a room full of men who are on my crew, and there's very few women that are out there, and I want to support all the women that do, but I get a lot of animosity because of it. Like, I didn't really realize why I was having such problems with producing and the things that I was going through. And I was talking to my director recently. He was like, "I don't understand why you have such a challenge with this." And then it dawned on me, it's because people don't think, I mean, this is a general stereotype that I'm running into, but people don't think that women could have any brains. Like, for instance, like technologically speaking, I'm very tech driven and I know a lot about that, but it's like it's just kind of a challenge, like, "Oh, you're a woman, you don't know how to do that kind of thing." So it's kind of like we have to even more try to show that we're we have to prove ourselves more, which, I mean, I hate, I don't want to have to do that. Like, I just want to be equals, but, and I hate to pull that card because I don't want to be like, oh, poor women, we're not equal and whatever kind of thing. But it's, I have to, I feel like I have to speak a lot louder than probably a man does to get in the door.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, and you know, it was across the board. I mean, you know, in the tech field as well. That you know, a lot of guys don't realize that there are a lot of very talented women that are you know, that are very, very smart in terms of being on computer geeks and all that, and they do get harassed a little bit too because of it. So
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
cross my fingers that starts to change, and it seems like it's starting to change as well. You know, the warning right now is, like I said, out on VOD. You guys can go to Film Canal and be able to watch it there as well. And then you said in a couple weeks, Google Play will have it as well as Amazon?
Yeah, we're in quality control right now with Amazon, iTunes, and Xbox. And then we've got some worldwide distribution deals that are in the mix right now. And then DVDs are available on Amazon, but they're also, the East Coast is selling them in like mom and pop shops around there with a company called iFlix Direct. And there's a lot of deals in the works, and that kind of goes back to your distribution thing of it's just you do a lot of all these little things and they all add up to a lot.
Yeah, but every little bit counts, as I say.
Right.
And you can follow Summer on Twitter at SummerMoore, and then do you guys have a Facebook at all for the film?
Yeah, it's called The Warning, the Movie.
Okay. And do you guys have a website at all?
Yeah, it's complicated, though, so it's easier to do Facebook.
Okay, so.
Yeah.
So The Warning, the Movie, right?
Right.
Okay, so make sure you guys check that out on Facebook as well. Absolute pleasure to have you and pick your brain a little bit, Summer, and I look forward to for this movie, and I also look forward to your upcoming projects. That Karma film actually sounds pretty sweet, actually.
Oh, thank you.
So yeah, and I want to mention there are a couple showings. I think you're going to be doing Los Angeles coming up in a couple weeks. Do you tell us a little bit about that too?
We have a public screening that's on May 28th that's at USC, University of Southern California, and I'm an alumni there, and so they're having a screening series for me with a Q&A at the end, and so public can just go online and under USC Cinemas and under The Warning, and they can RSVP there, and they can bring however many people they want. So that's the main one that I put out there for the public to come to.
Well, that's great. It'll be interesting to kind of, you know, show people what you've done, the people of your university, how you've done and all that as well. So that's really great to be able to see.
Thank you.
Yeah. And like I said, best of luck to you. We'll definitely talk soon, hopefully when this other movie comes out sometime down the line as well. Thanks for taking some time out, and we'll talk to you soon.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
No problem at all, Summer, and best of luck to you.
You too. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Summer Moore, everybody. You guys check her out at Summer Moore on Twitter. The Warning of the Movie on Facebook. We're going to be busy this week. Tomorrow we'll have a show. 1 p.m. I think it's 1 p.m. 2 p.m. Pacific, I believe, 4 p.m. Eastern. Let me go to the page real quick. We're going to have a very interesting stunt woman who was on Fast 7. She did Driving on Fast 7 as well. Her name is Sulin LaFontaine. She's also a very talented actress. She was at the Sundance Film Festival with Myrna the Monster. We'll be talking a little bit about, her being an actress as well as a stunt woman. So we'll be able to talk to her as well. Coming up on Thursday, we're going to have the Black Hef. We're going to be talking to him a little about his book coming up, also producing some really great music. The Black Hef will be there as well. I'm not sure what we're going to have next week. You guys know, I'm working on something big. Hopefully, fingers crossed, it'll go through. Please check us out on VegasPodcasting.com. Everything should be pretty much updated on the website. You guys can check that out as well. Some of our old interviews are on there from the past, so make sure you guys check that out as well. Make sure you check us out on Facebook, Somewhere in Vegas, and at SWIV, at SWIV for Somewhere in Vegas on Twitter. So guys, check that out as well. With that in mind, we'll see you guys tomorrow, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, with Sulin LaFontaine, the really great actress from Fast 7. We'll talk to you guys then.